Jaguars Digital. Jaguars, Jaguars Digital. Jaguars Drive Time. Ryan Sexton. John Osier. Ashlyn Sullivan. Jaguars Drive Time starts right now.
Good morning. Happy Monday. Fog rolling through downtown Jacksonville right now, but a moment of clarity for the Jaguars on defense yesterday as they took it to the Bengals, leading the way in a 23-7 win in front of the home fans. Welcome to Drive Time. I'm Brian Sexton, joined by John Osier and Ashlyn Sullivan. And over the course of the next 30 minutes, we'll recap yesterday, get you set for a busy, busy week. And of course, Jaguars All Access tonight over at Mellow Mushroom. Plenty of Jaguars talk for you. We bring in now the senior writer at Jaguars.com, John Osier. After
what did you say at the top of the show? Happy Monday?
Happy
That's
Monday.
That's Victory Monday to you, pal. Victory Monday.
We need a graphic that says Victory Monday, I guess, in here now, don't we?
On this show, it's
Interesting day yesterday. And we're going to dive into it in so many different ways. But it felt like, and it was interesting, at the very end of the game, I don't know whether you noticed this, but the wind started, it shifted, and it got cooler in the stadium, right as the game ended, and I thought, that's an interesting metaphor.
The winds have changed.
The winds of change are blowing, but it felt like a corner was turned. It felt a sharp edge. You could put your hands on it. The Jaguars pulled themselves around it and got out of
so literary.
The morass. Well, I mean, you're the guy.
I envy you right now.
Folks, look, you're the guy who 2 years ago gave me the most vivid image of where this team was.
Uh-oh.
Right? You don't even know where it is.
That's not even a good thing.
Well, no, you know exactly where I'm going. It's like putting your foot down in mud. Mm-hmm. And you try to lift your foot out, and occasionally get stuck. There's that suction effect as you're, they just couldn't get out of where they've been, which is they didn't win.
They've been stuck in the abyss for a long time,
and it feels like yesterday the abyss had been cleared. Now where they go is still to be determined, and it looks promising, but it feels like they got out of the mud yesterday and are now standing with 5-3 record. You know, they're right there near the top of the AFC,
and they're good. I mean, all right, what we learned about the game later on this morning, but the first one is that they're good. And I don't think you knew that they were good until yesterday. They had played well. They had had big wins, but 148 yards, 8 first downs. The Bengals were struggling offensively, but they weren't struggling offensively like that. And this was a game where, for a couple of quarters, it had a street fight feel. And it wasn't over early, and they took control, and then once they got the lead, they had a bad break. The Bengals got back into it with a 59-yard pass, but never panicked, never felt out of control, felt in control from the word go. They are out of the abyss, and they ought to win the division at this point. They're 5-3. They should repeat that and win the division.
Over 500 yards against the Colts, over 400 yards against the Bengals, who were a better-ranked defense in terms of yards per game than the Jaguars were coming into yesterday. So, in many, many respects, they showed up yesterday and made a statement. We've got a lot to talk about, and we couldn't do it without Ashlyn Sullivan, who joins us from the other side of the studio this morning. How are you this morning, Ashlyn?
Good. Victory Monday. I knew John was going to say it. I knew it was
coming. Yeah, the two of you were more into it than me this morning. So
we love victories, John and I.
Hello. I do, too. I just said it's a good morning.
It is. It's a great morning. And we're going in with big thing number one, defensive intensity. So when Jalen Ramsey got ejected from the game right at the end of the second quarter along with A.J. Green, right after halftime, this defense, they came with something to play for. Now, I was running audio behind the sidelines along with the lovely Max Hockman. And right before the defense took the field in the third quarter, Telvin Smith said, play for Jalen. Don't let the Bengals do what they're doing in our house. And every time A.J. Boye was mic'd up in the second half, he was telling someone and explaining to someone he couldn't understand why Jalen was ejected. But he said, forget it. We got to play for him.
Okay, before we talk about defensive intensity, we have to correct something because you got caught up in the literary thing that we were doing over here. Lovely and Max Hockman do not go together in the same sense.
He's
a lovely person. Let's make sure that we clarify that.
I hope you're listening, Max. I'm
sticking
up for
you. Oh, I know that he is, and he knows that we love him. But lovely, that might be a little bit of a stretch.
He's an absolute rock star.
He was yesterday. He was all over the sidelines. In fact, he goes into the locker room with me. Max, by the way, for those of you who are not here, because Max is not here either, is he's our videographer, producer, slash editor. He does everything, and he's on the sidelines. And so we were talking about it yesterday. He said, didn't it feel different? And he was right. It felt completely different from the defensive perspective. They're very good. They poured fuel on the fire yesterday. Mm-hmm. The Jalen thing took it to a completely different level. And I thought Yannick Ngakoue personified that. I mean, he was lit in the second half.
Yeah, during the games and the last couple times they've won, there's been a point where I've tweeted out avalanche. And it's when they get that feeling that you can't stop them. They know you have to the defense knows the other team has to throw. And all of a sudden you get that idea that a turnover can come on any play. You see the Seahawks play that way. You see the great defenses play that way. After Jalen went out of the game, in the second half, what was it, 16 total yards, 28 total yards?
Yep, 16 total yards. You know,
that's absurd. 148 yards for the game is absurd. 37 plays is absurd. A lot of that also goes credit to the offense, which I'm sure we'll talk about later. In fact, they were able to hold the ball. The defense was fresh all day. But, yeah, this is an inspired bunch. And when you look at it, they not only go 11 deep on this defense, they go 12, 13, 14 guys deep of guys that you trust, of guys who can all make plays. It's going to be an interesting second half of the season to watch these guys because you feel like, Brian, that they're getting better and they're gaining momentum and that they're gaining – there's something in the last couple of weeks where use the phrase, will you believe your press clippings? I don't know if they're doing that, but they're starting to believe they're good. And I think they thought they were good, but now there's a conviction that they're good and they can't wait to show it every week.
Anything else to add on Jalen's ejection on the entire –
should have happened.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
He shouldn't have been thrown out,
okay.
First of all. I mean, I understood what the ref said after the game, Brad Allen, about the feeling that Jalen's push instigated the situation. I've seen many, many, many players push on the level that Jalen pushed. Haven't seen very many of them thrown out for it. A.J. Green had to be thrown out. I didn't think Jalen Ramsey should have been thrown out. Probably should have been flagged, a front sports flag for the play.
There was an official with his flag in his hand ready to throw it after the
show. But I didn't think he should have been thrown out.
No, I didn't either.
But I don't think it – I got a lot of emails saying it was as egregious a mistake as I've seen an official make. I get why the official did it. In that circumstance, you have a control the game
moment. I was just about to say, they had to pull it back a bit.
I don't think he should have been thrown out considering the way A.J. Green attacked.
A couple more thoughts from the defense. Marcell Dareus joined the team last week for practice. Early on, he was a big factor against the run.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he made three or four tackles that just didn't get made before his arrival.
Yeah, and that's the idea. And I thought yesterday there were moments where Cincinnati had third and three or second, and you expected when the run first took shape, you looked at it and thought, okay, this is about a four-yarder coming. You know, you get a feel after watching for a while. With Dareus on the field and with the ability that he gives them to pursue freely on the outside, some of those would-be gains turned into no gains. In this league, it's all about down and distance on third down. That enabled them to get into a lot of good down and distance situations.
Final thought on the defense, the play of the safeties. And I for one, was not impressed with what Deshaun Gibson gave this team last year. This year, that has completely changed. He has become a much more physical player. Maybe he's following the lead of Barry Church. Maybe the pressure up front is just giving him the opportunity. Mm-hmm. He had a couple of tackles yesterday where I went, wow. And, of course, Barry Church was all over the field. The play of the safeties. We talk so much about the corners because Boye and Ramsey get so much attention nationally. But the safeties yesterday were a big factor in controlling the Bengals.
Yeah, I was talking in the locker room last Thursday. I was talking to Paul Pazlesny just about free agents. And this team's had an unbelievable run of free agents. I wouldn't call it unprecedented NFL history, but it's getting to the point where it has to be noted that you've had Calais Campbell, Malik Jackson, Barry Church. I'm running out. A.J. Boye.
Right.
So I was talking to Paz about it, and right then Deshaun Gibson walked by, and he goes, don't forget about that guy.
Yeah.
And I had, but I shouldn't have, because he's been good. I think Barry Church, to me, is a guy who shouldn't be overlooked, and I think he is. As much as Calais Campbell has gotten credit for changing the culture of the locker room, for being that defensive leader, playmaker, Barry Church is a smidge below that in terms of the impact. Same guy, different position, but the impact he's had on the secondary coming in is notable.
All right, defense leading the way for the Jaguars yesterday, but let's not forget the offense. When we come back, we will go to that side of the ball. The Jags in first place tie with the Tennessee Titans. Half a game behind the tiebreaker in the corner of the Titans right now, but still, seven games to play before those guys square off on New Year's Eve. More to come. Jags Drive Time on a beautiful Monday morning. A victory Monday, as John might say, after this. Jags Wired is a brand new show that brings you closer to the field than anywhere else.
Let's go!
We mic up the players.
We're giving it out wholesale today, baby.
Giving you exclusive access to what's happening on the sideline.
Let's set this tempo.
And on the field.
Hey, you can't block me.
We break down every aspect of Sunday's game, taking you inside the film room and the locker room.
And we beat a good football team.
Jags Wired airs Tuesday nights on Fox 30 at 11:35 and on demand on Jaguars.com. Jags Wired. Don't miss out.
What do you call a pack of Jaguars? A jamboree. The Jacksonville Jaguars want to offer a big thank you to the five local companies who've made the Jaguars Jamboree a party that never stops. Everbank, Baptist Health, Dreamfinders Homes, Publix, and U.S. Assure. Each of these partners provides unmatched support and dedication to the team year in and year out and help make game day special. Jaguars fans, join the Jamboree and support these companies and all the partners who support the team.
Welcome back to Jags Drive Time on this Victory Monday. Big thing number two, and it's about number five. Blake Bortles had himself a day. He's probably going to get lost in the commotion today about how well the defense played and everything that went on with Jalen Ramsey. But at the very end of the game, when Doug decided to take a knee in the red zone, Blake came over and he was upset. He wanted to go for it. At the very end of the game in the locker room, they kind of got in a little scuffle on the field. At the end of the game, Doug Marrone in the post-game speech said, "Where's my guy? Where's number five?" Came and gave him a big hug. And guys, he deserved that hug, I thought.
You know, Brandon Linder said to me in the locker room afterwards that the offense was feeding off of the intensity of Blake Bortles. Mm-hmm. I don't know that intensity is a word I use with him a lot. He's not that guy. He's pretty laid back. Mm-hmm. But he said, absolutely, the guy has confidence, and he was intense, and the offense loved it yesterday.
Well, and Burford came out during the week and said Blake Bortles couldn't beat him. Doug said after the game, I think he's right, that he was a little concerned of how you respond to that, because that kind of thing makes you mad, ticks you off, and that can cause you to be too hyped up. I thought on the play where Blake, it was the left side of the field, and he got hit coming out, but he stiff-armed the Bengals. It was clear he was fired up yesterday, and it was clear he wanted that game. And after the game, when he made the comment about he sort of tried to low-key it a little bit, and I did a nice job of it until the very end when he said, "I thought we did a nice job kicking their butts."
Yeah.
Or essentially
beating the crap
like,
out of him is
right.
What he said.
Better. I mean, that's why he's on the podium and I'm sitting here with you. But
whoa, what's the matter? With
much better. I don't know.
Or me.
Yeah. Right.
Well, we could always get Hockman in here. But the intensity that he showed, the fire is all great. But the fact is, he's had three of his best career games in the last six games. I don't know that he's winning games for this team. He's sure not losing them. And he sure yesterday had four or five different plays where he checks off to receivers, made good decisions. I thought yesterday was hands down the best I've seen him play in terms of decision-making and packaging it with performance.
As a pro, not just this year. You're talking about
I didn't watch much of UCF. That's to Candace. I mean, but as a pro.
You're going back to 2015.
Oh,
this is the best game he's played.
He's much better the last six games than he ever was in any stretch in 2015.
So at one point I looked up and saw the stats that had the Jags, I think they were 10 of 12 on third down, mm-hmm. which is astronomical. They were 83%.
And a lot of that was him making good decisions and good throws
in
on third
pocket,
down.
In the pocket, very patient, and even on the run. And I've always thought that he is a better quarterback in terms of accuracy mm-hmm. when he's moving. And yesterday he made a throw. The Jags were going right to left,
yep.
and he was running to his right, and he put the ball on a dime. It was third and seven,
yep.
and they didn't have to be as precise. The game was in control, and yet that showed the intensity with which he was playing. He was terrific in the pocket yesterday.
And there were four or five plays in the first half where they get forgotten because it winds up 23-7, and Jalen and AJ are doing their thing. But if Blake doesn't make a few big throws in the first half, all of a sudden – the Jaguars' offense is off the field, and the defense is back on it. Midway through the second quarter, I was sitting next to Mark Brunell in the press box.
Sorry for you.
I'll pick that name up right there. And
you're good this morning.
He looked at me and said, "Boy, the Bengals have been on the field the whole half," meaning the defense. As a quarterback, he sort of knew what that meant. And midway through the third quarter, he said, "I'd be shocked if the Bengals score again." Because of that element, because of the way the Jaguars defense was playing, the time that they were able to be on the field because of Blake Bortles completely changed that game.
You know, speaking of the Bengals defense, they have some really good players up front. I mean, Carlos Dunlop, Geno Atkins is as good as they come. They have talent. Vontaze Burfict. But the guy who, he's the guy that flashed the most was Drake Kirkpatrick, the corner, because the ball was always coming his direction. It was always going down the field.
Yeah, and again, Blake Bortles, the decision-making and even the accuracy yesterday, I thought were off the charts. And I thought Nate Hackett, as much as you can tell what a game plan is from the press box, I thought he called a great game in terms of getting guys open, in terms of getting third down plays where Blake had one option, could check quickly to the right option. 12-18 on third downs. That's phenomenal.
One more guy. We can't leave an offensive segment without it, and that is the catch that Keelan Cole made. It's a highlight reel catch.
Catch of the year. If it gets beat as catch of the year in the last eight games, I want to see the catch. For sure I will, because I'll probably be at the game, but I want to see something be better than
it's
that.
It's an Odell
catch.
Beckham Jr. kind of catch.
And then to turn it into 20, like, most guys would have fallen down
right
after the catch, and he turns it into 18 more yards. He's coming along. In the last two games, he's made plays that have helped. That play there got them 3 points. It's a third down where they have to punt, most likely, if you don't make the play. Little things like that in the first half enabled the second half to play out as it did.
Pride of Kentucky Wesleyan. Let's shake things up a little bit. Instead of going to Big Thing 3, Ashlyn, how about we do Ozone Snapshot?
Let's do it. When you guys talked about the comfort of Blake in the pocket, well, Brian from New Hampshire, he wants to talk more about it. Most impressive thing about the 5-3 start to me is Blake's play. He might not have the flashy numbers, but he has improved finally and just maybe figured it out. Is this defense playing that good, rubbing off and making Blake play more relaxed and smarter football? And John, I know these questions are for you, but I have to agree that when you got a defense that good, how could Blake not feel more comfortable in the pocket?
I guess it's the A zone now. I guess that's what we're looking at.
Yeah. I like that.
But I think Blake, and I think you wrote it in Quick Thoughts yesterday, he's embraced his role. And Nate Hackett talked about it last week, what a good job Blake is doing in terms of getting them into the right runs, in terms of if there's a bad play at the line of scrimmage, he's making the right read and really helping the running game. He's embraced this idea, you know, say a game manager, but of running a running offense. And he's mentioned several times in press conferences in the last couple of weeks, this is what the offense is. It's not a run and gun. It's not a 2015 offense. I think overall, that is not as easy a transition as it might sound. People want Blake to be able to say this in April, oh, I'm going to run a running offense. And all of a sudden, first game of the season, oh, it's going to be awesome, and you're hunky-dory, and you're walking. But it takes time to do that, and I think we are seeing in the last 3 or 4 weeks Blake get better and better at this new role.
Well, and I thought he's embraced the passing game that these guys are using, which is the controlled passing, some of the shorter stuff, the middle screen stuff, and then the screen game, which they didn't get going yesterday, but he's really become good at selling the screen. Yesterday there was guys coming
absolutely
free quicker than they should have, which is on the offensive line.
It's been a staple all year.
But he does it well, and it is a craft that he has started to perfect.
If all you looked at, if you had no idea what Blake Bortles had been before the last six games, what would you think of him as a quarterback?
Nice. Promising young quarterback.
There's a lot of future
quarterback.
So that's going to be interesting to see in the last eight games if that holds up.
All right. Back for more of the A-Zone Snapshot. I'm sorry, O-Zone Snapshot.
Oh, I love that. Can we call it A-Zone, John? Maybe just for a week?
No.
No. All right. Moving on. Alan from Jacksonville. He's got jokes this morning. So did the Jaguars forget they were playing at home? Did they fly them around in a plane for a few hours and stay in a hotel before the game? LOL, go Jags. Hilarious.
No, who do you think he is, you?
I thought all – we've talked about this a lot, Brian. I thought all season it was a great storyline. It's an easy thing to write, and if you're talking about and if you're sitting on this set, oh, they can't win at home. They can't win at Everbank. I thought – once they continued to get better and find themselves, as they got better, the Everbank thing was going to take care of itself. The can't win back-to-back games was going to take care of itself. Yesterday, that's what it felt like. Because as I'm walking down the stairs yesterday, I wasn't thinking about those two storylines. I was thinking about the defense and Blake, and I almost had to remind myself, oh, yeah, they just won their second home game. I mean, yeah, they just won their first home game. They just won back-to-back games at the bank. They're getting better and better, and the EverBank Field thing took care of itself.
It's probably worth noting to Ozone riders like that that they do actually stay in a hotel the night before a home game also.
Right. Well, but I had maintained that the idea might be to get on a plane, fly around Orlando, and fly back.
So, oh, I missed that.
Yeah.
Well, that was the easy story that you wrote? Just
what, well, it was just one? More of a one-liner. You know okay. how I'm sort of
I'm learning how you work. Yeah. Yeah. More and more every day. All right. When we come back, we will talk big thing number three and give you some final thoughts, set up the week for you. The Chargers come in. Phillip Rivers, big game on Sunday for the Jags here at EverBank Field. Back after this on Jags Drive Time.
Jaguars All Access presented by Fields Auto Group is the only local show taking you inside the huddle with your favorite team.
Give me everything you got. Let's go.
Each week, Jags big man in the middle, Calais Campbell, and a teammate join Jeff Lagerman and me, Brett Martineau, at Mellow Mushroom in Avondale for insight and access you can't get anywhere else. Come out and be a part of the show live or tune in Mondays at 7 p.m. on CBS 47, your official Jaguar stations. Jaguars All Access presented by Fields Auto Group. Don't miss out.
Jags fans, it's time to win today. Get Jaguar season tickets so you don't miss a minute of the action at the bank this fall.
Touchdown! A pick six for Jalen Ramsey!
When you lock in on any season ticket package, you win today. Receive exclusive member benefits, including Jaguars playoffs and Daly's Place concert purchasing priority. Be a part of the number one game experience in the NFL. Visit jaguars.com/win today and pick your seats. Call 904-633-2000 today.
Welcome back to Jags Drive Time Monday morning. Big thing number three, no Leonard, no problem this week. It shows that this team has depth in basically every position and they could still manage to score 23 points even with their best offensive weapon off the field. So guys, this team, it didn't let that slow them down.
No. Not in any way, shape, or form. And I'll be honest with you. Before the game, when the word came that he was not playing, I thought, against this defense of the Bengals, yeah, that's going to be a much tougher task. Now, Bortles stepped up and made some throws and loosened them up. But impressive what this offensive line was able to do. Shatley at center, Linder at guard, and Ivory and Yeldon splitting the carries.
Well, on the Jaguars pregame show yesterday, Tony Boselli gave me a lot of grief because I said I didn't think the loss of Fournette was going to bother the offense very much. And Tony was, Tony, a little bit of a blowhard. Well, guess what?
A little bit.
I was right this time.
Where's the rationale behind that? Because against that front,
oftentimes,
I didn't see it being that easy.
Teams can overcome. And I told Tony, hey, you used to go out all the time. Ben Coleman stepped in. They never missed a beat. Well, he didn't like that very much either. And he pointed out that his name's on the wall. But he... oftentimes, teams can overcome for the short term the loss of a great player. And I just thought that with moving Brandon Leonard to guard, with having Tyler Shatley still at center, I thought there would be a adrenaline surge, sort of a show, let's show people we can do this in this way. And I thought that the offensive line and the running game, frankly, are getting to the point where they had showed against Indianapolis, which is not a great defense, obviously, but they weren't a bad running team. I mean, they weren't a bad run defense. They're getting to the point where they're showing people we can do this no matter the circumstance. The fact that they did it, though, I was very confident on the show saying that because there's really no ramification if I'm wrong. I wasn't that confident in it, but the fact that they did it to me bodes very well for the second half of the season.
And not bad for you either.
Along with the defense, the running game has turned into something that you cannot imagine not being good the second half of the season.
Do you look that smart every day, or is that just a once?
No, never.
In an occasion.
Yeah, it's very fluky.
So I really, a move that is overlooked with everything is keeping Shatley at center where he had been, right? And moving Linder out to guard rather than having Linder come in and play center after missing it and then moving Shatley to guard and having Shatley play a different position. That in of itself, you know, a lot of times when you have a tackle that goes down, the left tackle goes down, people's instant reaction is, well, let's take the right tackle and put him at left tackle because it's our second best tackle. But what it does is it takes a guy and moves him out of position and then leaves another position and it makes them both weaker.
Right.
So I thought that was a really smart move. It also got Linder lined up on Geno Atkins one-on-one more often, and we all know what Linder can do.
In the short term, there's often the school of thought, let's not disrupt two positions for one. That's what they did, and I thought Linder, again, showed maybe the most underrated player on the team, doesn't play the skill position. Obviously, everybody notices him, but obviously a fabulous job yesterday. And I thought a lot of credit to Cam Robinson. If you question the kid's toughness, playing on an ankle, has it again, and yet you knew there was no way he wasn't coming back in the game. He went out, basically walked around the bench and came back in.
He's really,
credit to him. Yeah.
He really played well, and he's really looking like an incredibly promising prospect. Hey, we can't leave without talking about Jaden Mickens in the punt return.
Unbelievable.
Because the last time we were here, the Rams abused the special teams units for two touchdowns and even a field goal. So to see that come back around, for this group to come back around and make the play that slammed the door, was pretty big for Joe D and his crew.
Well, the wherewithal, I mean, this is the kid's what? I think it was the second punt return.
Yeah, second.
He made a really smart veteran move, and he said after the game, every touchdown that he's ever seen, the guy started off just heading straight up field. So he basically decided to try that. And then he has the wherewithal at the 10-yard line to flip. This is his first one. And he said it was a tribute to Reggie Bush, who I guess was his favorite player coming up. But I thought it was pretty remarkable that he remembered to flip. And it's easy to say when you're a kid, I'm going to flip when I get in the end zone. But he did it.
I thought it was remarkable that he could actually do it.
Yeah.
To me, that's remarkable.
That goes without saying. But to me, the wherewithal to do it, I thought that was pretty cool.
I'm outside. I'm on the field during games. And the atmosphere was amazing. Mm-hmm. People had been waiting a long time to have fun. And it was cool to see them enjoying it. Next week should be crazy.
It's what it's all about. And you and I have talked, Brian, because we were both here in the 90s. We felt the days where, it's, you know, I think back to the Tampa Bay when Fred went 78 against Tampa Bay. And it was gray at night, and everybody's going crazy, and you wanted that feeling back. It started to feel that way yesterday at 5-3, and you've got how many games left here? Four? Five?
Yes, four.
Boy.
And the Gus thing doesn't even come into it, but the Chargers, I mean, the Gus thing comes into it a little bit for the
obviously
players.
Obviously, you brought it up. So.
Well, yeah. I think people will talk about it.
Sure.
The bigger storyline is that Philip Rivers and the Chargers have beaten this team, I think, six straight times. The last win here was in 2007. When Maurice Jones-Drew had that, you know, crushing block on Sean Merriman.
Mm-hmm.
It's been that long. By the way, it had been, I think, 10 years since the Jags had beaten the Steelers and 10 or 11 years since the Jags had beaten the Bengals. So there's a little theme here coming along. And it's Salute to Service Week. You got two great Navy towns in San Diego and Jacksonville. This should be a lot of fun. Plus, they're in a race now.
Yep.
In the AFC South with the Titans, week in and week out, is what are the Titans doing? I had my eye on the scoreboard looking to see where the Titans-Ravens game was yesterday.
I'll write the Rivers thing all week because, again, it's low-hanging fruit. Yeah. It's easy. But doesn't this feel like a defense that's ready to bash that out of the water?
Without a doubt.
And maybe it won't happen, but Philip Rivers has had great games against this team. He's never faced this.
Okay. Well, the Jaguars get a terrific pass rush, the best one they faced all year probably, with those two coming from the outside. So they're going to have their hands full also.
It's gotten fun.
Joey Bosa and crew. It should be a lot of fun, and that's what this is all about. This was fun. I enjoyed it. Thanks for coming in this morning.
Anytime.
I can't wait.
Anytime for you.
I can't wait to read your witty banter.
Let's get Hockman on next time.
This show has all kinds of avenues and angles still left for us to approach, folks. So show up for Friday morning and Jags Drive Time. But tonight, Jaguars All Access at Mellow Mushroom in Avondale. Calais Campbell, Brent Martineau, Jeff Loggeman. 7 o'clock on CBS 47. Then, if you're interested in the radio side of it, J.P. Shadrick will try to get in between Tony Boselli and Pete Prisco. That's always fun. Jaguars Monday comes along at 6 o'clock, and you know where to find all that stuff. So, on behalf of John Osher and Ashlyn Sullivan and the terrific Joe Fortunato and Pat Cavanaugh and Max Hockman and Dave DeCandis, we say enjoy the not-so-foggy morning.